Polly, we have the pleasant tradition of bringing to our commencement exercises each year, as honored guest and speaker, a leader in the life of this great state of California. Such a guest is with us today. Much of his leadership has been exercised in a field which is very close to us. He is the president of the State Board of Education and also chairman of the Board of Trustees of the state college system. On July 1st, the trustees will take over from the State Board of Education and the Department of Education full administrative authority for the 15 California state colleges. Mr. Heilbrun has broad interests. He is a practicing attorney, has served in both state and federal governmental agencies, including the State Relief Administration and the Board of Economic Welfare, Washington, D.C., and helped to start San Francisco's educational television station. He has been a trustee of the World Affairs Council and the University of California Foreign Student Center at Berkeley, and is past president of the Public Education Society of San Francisco. He was at one time assistant dean of students at the University of California in Berkeley. He is a dedicated person, giving freely of his time to work for the welfare of the state and the nation. He has made many contributions to the state and to Cal Poly. He was honored last Saturday as the recipient of an honorary doctor's degree by the University of California at the commencement exercises. Our speaker had a look at Cal Poly for the first time just 7 weeks ago when he was my guest during Poly Royal. I am glad that he was sufficiently pleased with us that he saw fit to come back to us today. It is with great personal pleasure that I present to you Mr. Lewis H. Heilbrun, Chairman of the State College Board of Trustees.
President McPhee, members of the graduating class, including the PhDs, faculty, and friends, thank you very much, President McPhee, for your generous introduction. As you have said, in approximately 2 weeks, an important event will take place in the history of the state of California, particularly with respect to the state colleges. For the first time, they will constitute a separate and independent system and will operate under their own board of trustees. The chief executive, who will be the chancellor, is one of America's most distinguished educators, Dr. Buell Gallagher. Indeed, the colleges will soon be celebrating their own 4th of July. But as we pass from the old to the new, from the loose confederation of colleges into the more orderly development contemplated by the master plan, we should pay tribute to the presidents of the state colleges, to the superintendent of public instruction, and to the many state boards of education under whom these colleges were founded and developed. They would not have grown and matured to the point where they have become entitled to an independent structure and status if they had not been guided by dedicated men. Your natural concern may well be, what will happen to Cal Poly under the new regime? Is it the intention of the trustees to impose a uniform pattern and character upon all of the colleges under their jurisdiction? May I assure you that we have no such intention. Our purpose is to coordinate the colleges and to establish similar standards of excellence and efficiency of operation in all of them, but this does not mean identical programs. Each of the various colleges should have its own character and individuality, which will always be related to its history, its location, its tradition, and the manner in which it can best serve its region and the state. There is no one super freeway along which excellence must be pursued. There are several roads leading to more than one kind of excellence in education. Cal Poly has adopted one of these alternate roads. It has made a unique contribution to education in California under the imagination, drive, and philosophy of your extraordinary president, Julian McPhee, who in the course of less than 30 years, with the enthusiastic assistance of the faculty, students, and alumni, has converted a few shacks on a hillside into a major educational institution whose impact is felt from one end of the state to the other. Indeed, in recent years, through an enlarged foreign student enrollment from one end of the world to the other. I do not mean that you cannot modify or improve. Any living institution will adjust to the demands of its environment, but there are basic values in the Cal Poly program which must and will be preserved. Let me give you some impressions, some of my impressions about this college. Less than 2 months ago, my wife and I visited this institution on the occasion of your Poly Royal. Dr. and Mrs. McPhee desired us to see all of the exhibits we could possibly reach in a night and a day, and he gave us the kind of schedule that American tourists usually have on their first trip to Europe when they want to see all the points of cultural and historical interest in 2 days in each capital. When we reached home, I made some notes of this visit, primarily to give some order to my many impressions, and it is these notes which constitute the basis of my commencement address this afternoon. These are some thoughts suggested by the Poly Royal when your college was on public display. In general, it is abundantly clear that the philosophy of learning by doing provides a tremendous amount of motivation for good work. Practically all of you know why you came here. You have a closer touch with reality than most students. There are large areas where your performance depends on sound coordination of mind and body, where your feet must be on the ground you cultivate, where your hands touch and care for the animals you tend, where you build small improvements in order to plan larger ones. This procedure is not applied to all of your curricula, but to a substantial part of it. America was pioneered and built by a practical people who were prepared to deal with reality. We need more than ever before skilled, disciplined, and self-reliant personnel who can meet the unprecedented demands for production and distribution in the last part of this century. Those of you who have contracts in animal husbandry know much about pride in work, individual achievement, and responsibility. You have learned both to regard and to disregard time on a creative job. In another field, I had the same impression. The door to your architectural building is never locked, and I was told that students drift in and out of that building late hours and on weekends to finish tasks which they have assumed and for which they feel responsibility. This is the kind of energy and dedication we need in the trial of strength which will be ours on the international scene for many years. It is my understanding that theory is mostly studied after doing rather than before. I pretend to no expertness in this matter, whether the chicken represents work and the egg theory or vice versa, but I do believe that somewhere in your educational program, whether at Cal Poly or subsequently, you should take as much theory as possible and study ideas for their own sake. The only pitfall I can see in a preoccupation with doing is that you might become hostile to ideas and theories. It is important to remember that whole systems of government, of economics, of business, of agriculture, are based on conceptions and ideas and are controlled by them. The development of strong departments in the liberal arts and sciences for general education purposes, as well as for their own majors, should provide the balance needed. I was intrigued by two games in your carnival. In one, a young man sat high in a cage over a tank of water, and the participants in the game threw balls at round targets, which, when hit, caused the young man to fall into the water. I was very much interested to see how many times this young man was tumbled into the water in a very few minutes. I have respect for the marksmanship and skill of Cal Poly students. There was another game close by, operated by some of your foreign students, I believe an Indian group. The object of this game was to hold and guide a loop up, down, and over a long wire, exhibiting many turns and angles, without touching the wire. This game required an inordinate amount of patience, and very few were successful in controlling the moving loop so that it went from end to end without touching the wire. We are somewhat impatient people. When it comes to immediate aims, to doing something that we can see clearly, the end result as well as the initial act, knocking the young man into the water, achieving the direct short-term aim, we are most competent and successful. But when we have to exercise great control and patience over a long-range period, when our policies must be delicately adjusted from day to day to achieve a long-term end which is difficult to keep in mind, we are not so competent, not so successful. Yet this is the problem of our times, your day as well as mine. Our objectives, disarmament, assistance to underdeveloped countries, maintaining strength and yet avoiding war, providing equality of opportunity for all men within our borders, making parts of the free world freer in their distribution of economic and social benefits. These require a fixed determination, a willingness to hold on and to persist, which we must learn and apply. I think those games had something to tell us. A project which seemed to combine the creative and the practical, the long term as well as the short term, was the architectural program whereunder teams of students go to nearby communities such as Santa Barbara and Monterey, and after consultation with officers and citizens, develop a master community plan for the city. This kind of project must be deeply satisfactory to the participants. It relates the human elements and the building elements. It attempts to deal with the whole of the problem as well as its constituent parts. It provides the opportunity for teamwork without which no construction achievement is possible. Another exhibit that caught my eye was a profile of soil. It showed that it was not merely the surface loam that counted, but the depth of the top and subsoil. It had to be about 5 feet in depth in order to be a rich soil. A thin surface soil may look as efficient and dependable, but you know its limitations, and you also know that it can be exhausted or blown away. This is true about almost everything that has meaning or value. It is not the top layer of a person's technical knowledge or his scholarship or his personality that counts. It is the depth. The man who operates on the surface may obtain the first good job or the first opportunity, but he will not last. You cannot fool your co-workers, your employer, your community with whom you live and work. As graduates, you have varying depths of experience and knowledge and other intangible assets of a college education, and those also can be the subject of erosion. It is difficult to believe that the North African coast was once one of the richest and greenest agricultural areas in the world, but lack of care and attention brought the desert to the sea. If you do not keep up your studies in your chosen fields, if you do not continue to read and to develop your cultural interests and exercise your critical faculties, these will dry up in the same way. I was delighted with one of the social science exhibits, providing a large chart setting forth lowbrow, lower middle brow, higher middle brow, and highbrow cultural levels in our society. You may remember that the lowbrow liked a writhing rock and roll singer for musical entertainment, confession magazines and comics for reading, TV dinners and boxing and beer for entertainment. At the other end of the scale, the highbrow liked ballet, criticism of criticism for reading, horse racing, and imported red wine. Such generalizations concerning marks of social status are amusing and have their points. But many of these so-called symbols are of no importance. The important matter is to do the things you want to do and enjoy them because they satisfy a need in you, and not because they may, to some people, convey some mark of distinction. I think it is pretty well recognized that if First Night Grand Opera had to depend for its support on those in the audience who love and appreciate fine music, over one half of the seats would be empty. Wear a genuine brow, whatever it is. The exhibits on electronics and computers mystified me, but they always do. There was one computer that gave an answer in 27 seconds, which would take a good mathematician some 3 full days to work out. The feeding of typewritten tapes into linotype machines, also exhibited, will make newspaper publishing even more efficient, although I doubt whether being able to publish an additional extra per day will add very much to the sum total of human knowledge. All of this automation gave me some reason to pause. I have thought that perhaps we may be approaching the end of an era, that I may be one of the last commencement speakers, a good thing, and you may be one of the last human graduating classes at the college. In 10 or 20 years hence, the graduating class may consist of a number of different types of computer machines, all neatly boxed in black, with some kind of four-cornered headgear on top, and the speaker will be a ponderous machine of the UNIVAC type, and all the graduating computer machines will be plugged into the speaker machine and will instantaneously record for permanent memory the mechanical words of wisdom which the speaking machine will perforate upon their respective cards. I assume there will be some human element, a thin line of faculty and their assistants who will have fed the machines with their information and tended them over a 2-week course. I'm assuming also that automation efficiency will have reduced the 4-year course to 2 weeks. What will the rest of the population be doing? attending baseball games where they are hopeful that the Giants will win their first pennant, watching television while the sheriff kills off the 10 millionth cattle rustler, filling the sky, flying about on their own individual automatic wings, visiting relatives for weekends thousands of miles away, planning a vacation to the moon. My guess is that people will be very much here, including young and eager graduates like yourselves, instead of those imagined machines, but that their energies may have to be guided and redirected. Automation will have an increasing effect on our living. But as you know already, industrialization and mechanization, while eliminating large areas of employment, have substituted others. We can anticipate that the production and servicing of new machines will open up new vistas for production and distribution. Consider the amount of new employment already created by the electronics industry. It may well be true if the human beings who have created the machines can master themselves and hold the world together, that all of us will have much more time, call it leisure if you will, to do things other than required work. I believe that what you will then find will be a great hunger on the part of vast numbers of people for education for its own sake, not to improve one's employment classification or to attend some more complicated machine, but to enable a person more fully to appreciate and enjoy life. For many, education will become a continuing and important factor throughout most of their days. Moreover, we will be exporting and transferring our talents to all parts of the world. Nevertheless, it will require almost superhuman effort for men to control their machines and to use their machines as vehicles toward the better life. Before I left the campus, I saw this stadium, and it immediately recalled to me that this year has been marred for all of us by one sad event, the air tragedy of last October, which quickly took the shape of a national disaster. It was a shocking and terrible reminder that man and his machines are not perfect. But more than anything else, it told of acts of heroism and self-sacrifice in those dreadful final moments for which we will be eternally proud and which will serve as a testimonial to the faith and courage of the men of Cal Poly. So the stadium is in effect their memorial and will serve as an inspiration to the students of this campus of their own generation and of untold student generations to follow. A most provocative exhibit was that of the journalism department, which obtained the first page of the leading newspapers all over the world as published on April 12, 1961, and showed the headline history of that day. Arrangements for this date were made well in advance, but by coincidence, the headlines referred to the same event. They reported the Soviet astronaut who went into orbit in outer space, a great scientific achievement. Yet in a way, it turned out to be more of a demonstration for our way of life than for theirs, because it outlined once again the worth and grandeur of individual achievement. For a brief period, the Soviet people celebrated the man rather than some mass action or state program. It gives us some hope to believe that if their government gives them enough period of peace for opportunity to exploit their intellectual curiosities for scientific progress and for human betterment, their children will be more like yours, with a definite preference for the individual and his freedom, instead of your children being more like theirs of the present day, as Mr. Khrushchev so confidently prophesied, so that to their own astonishment, his dire prophecy will prove true, but in reverse. Now that we have touched upon the individual, what about your own goals for the future? What is your intended orbit? Permit me to suggest a few guidelines. You owe it to yourself to develop your maximum potential. Have you completed your education to accomplish your own goal? If not, go on, continue with your education, complete it, do it when and while you can. Work or borrow if you need to. Obtain a grant if you are eligible, but do it. You will never regret developing and strengthening your talents and proficiencies. Remember that self-development is based on freedom, and that the college is the place for the free expression of ideas. There are always people, some with the best of intentions, but with a limited point of view, who for one reason or another will exercise pressure to suppress that freedom. Yet that very freedom, with its risks of sometimes being ill-advised or abused, is the edge which a free society has over a totalitarian in the competition which has become part of our daily life. As graduates, remember and support the academic freedom you wanted your college to have when you were undergraduates. As citizens, you have the privilege and responsibility of voting. This includes husbands outside the home. Anyone who participated in or observed the last presidential election understands that every vote is important. A citizen's vote is a decision of government. Yours should be an informed vote based on a fair analysis and evaluation of issues and candidates. The most powerful symbol of freedom in the world is the American citizen entering the cloistered privacy of his voting booth. Your generation will determine the success of desegregation in the schools, in housing, and economic opportunity. You will have to overcome the prejudices of the past and the present. If you help solve this problem, each of you, by some concrete act, you will be fulfilling the promise and the challenge of your citizenship. About the cultural level, establish homes where your children hear good speech from you and from those around them. Have good books around the house. Be selective in your television programs for the family, and you will strike some blows for American culture that will be felt. Many of you will be teachers. This is a great calling, and your opportunities are immense. In your hands will be the education of future generations of Americans. From a layman's point of view, you might remember this. It's the subject that counts. It's the hard core of knowledge that counts. It's developing the critical and creative faculties of your students that counts. And the methods of teaching are simply means to an end. Particularly in junior high and secondary schools, the subject is the thing. Learn it, know it, teach it, and if you are one of those adventurous souls, and I'm afraid this must come after some home experience, who wish to spend some time in teaching and training teachers in underdeveloped countries, we can spare you. The good you can do humanity will more than make up for the inconvenience you may cause us. If you are an engineer or agricultural or other major who had to forego the humanities in large part because of curriculum requirements, take some arts courses in graduate school, in adult education, in extension, over TV, if any are available. If you are an arts major who neglected to investigate the world of mathematics and physics, at least take a general course in science from one of the same sources. If you are a foreign student, I hope that you have enjoyed your studies and your life here. If there have been some difficulties, try to help a fellow countryman avoid the same problems. Under any circumstances, you should know that we want you to return to your country to do your best for it, to remember that in extending educational opportunity to you, we have had nothing to sell you or propagandize you, and have nothing to ask of you except to remember three things. Our ideals here are for a free society, stressing the worth of each individual. We have been making steady progress toward these ideals since 1776, and these ideals are for all men everywhere. There are many people who are worried about all college students and graduates and the uncertainties you and the rest of us face. I look upon it differently. I think you have almost unlimited goals. You are the first generation that can reach for the moon and actually touch it. To many of you will come the opportunity in some degree to participate in the growth of the great state of California. To many, the opportunity of developing much further the vast natural resources of this region. To all of you will come the opportunity in some degree to help hold this small planet together, to make it a better place to live for all men, to enjoy and share a richer personal and community life, and to help strengthen this country so that its great influence among the nations will effectuate that peace with freedom, which is our most cherished goal. I congratulate you on these opportunities and pray that you will make the most of them. Thank you.